Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. And Chris, we texted back and forth. You, my friend, said we had a lot to talk about. We do. Bowling Green 34? No, Penn State 34. Bowling Green 27. Seemed to be headed the other way, though, didn't it?
Yes, sort of feels like it was the other way around, does it not?
Oh, boy, it sure does. And I'll tell you what, my take, and I'm going to get your take right off the bat, but what shocked me was with what ease Bowling Green's offense just sliced and diced Penn State's defense in that first half. You were there for the game. You saw it. What was your instant reaction to that performance?
Well, in the first half, my instant reaction was, and I'm not one who's prone to hyperbole, Jim, so this is a measured, non-emotional reaction, but I thought it was reasonable to demand that Tom Allen be publicly executed by firing squad.
I'll tell you what, I like that as a non-emotional response. Thank goodness. What would have been if you had gotten emotional about it?
Sure, sure. And for the record, I am opposed to the death penalty. So at the end of the day, I guess I would have to put the kibosh on that. But again, not out of the unreasonable spectrum of reactions to that first half to Penn State's defensive performance, in my opinion.
Well, I am against the death penalty, Chris, except in extenuating circumstances.
Extreme cases, which this might qualify. Yeah.
And I think shooting a cop, extenuating circumstances. Playing defense the way they did this first half, extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, here's the frustrating thing, Jim. I understand the post-win hangover and going through the motions and sleepwalking and blah, blah, blah. But I did have to laugh when I looked at the comments on this week's edition of the obligatory pregame show, where somebody commented on YouTube that he was glad, or she, that they were glad they did not, they waited until Sunday morning to watch the show. Because had they not, the irrational confidence of all four of us might have led them to go out and lay the points for Penn State despite their better judgment. And I think I even said during the program as we were giving our score predictions, which we call the random number generator as a way of making fun of how pointless score predictions are, that none of us knows what we're talking about. Like, this is what you don't go to our program for that. But that said, the way in which Penn State went behind in that game is distressing to me.
It was. And by the way, one of those foolish people to bet on the Nittany Lions this weekend, yours truly.
Yeah, yeah, it was one of Mike the Mailman's Trends to Treasure pick, take the Nittany Lions. That screwed up his picks for the weekend, Penn State, ruining a lot of Saturdays for many Nittany Lions fans. But on the flip side, I'm sure you'll hear this point made a million and one times over the next 2 weeks now. Yes, a little rain fell in Happy Valley in the morning, but then the skies cleared up, and we had blue and white clouds and bright, beautiful sunlight illuminating Mount Nittany's green peaks. And that perhaps is a metaphor for how Saturday went for Penn State, because as badly as that game looked through much of it, we were 1-0 this week, which is more than can be said for the Wolverines and the Fighting Irish and the Hawkeyes, who are all having a much worse week than we are.
They are. And I want to get to that. I really do, Chris, because that was the only thing that made me feel a bit better. However, I will point out on Jim's bets for the weekend, I also had the Eagles. I also had Tennessee. I had Nebraska over Colorado.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty – oh, one other one I had. I had a bet, Chris, you'll appreciate this as an Eagles fan, that Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley would have a minimum of 2 touchdowns.
Well, Saquon took care of you all on his own.
He took care of me nice and early, Chris.
I love it. And the Eagles were, they were -3, -3.5 in that one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you were good there. You got the cover. And you mentioned Tennessee. I know we'll get back to Penn State here, but just looking at the bigger picture of college football, look, Nico Iomaliava is the real deal. I really think Tennessee might be the sleeper team of this season. They've got a great shot to upset some people in the SEC and maybe end up in the SEC title game. But for sure, I think they are early on one of the major league contenders for one of those at-large bids at minimum.
Just to follow that path a little bit, Chris, that Southeast Conference, we know who's at the top. That's Georgia. But it's I don't even know where to put Alabama after this weekend. But it was those middling – I call them middling teams. How about the second tier?
Yeah.
Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU. You knew one or two of them would rise to the top and one or two of them would not. And it appears that Tennessee is going to be one of those teams rising to the top.
And by the way, you mentioned those teams, and it's probably fair by the standards of the SEC to describe them as the middling, quote-unquote, second tier. Any one of those teams you mentioned could probably finish in the Big Ten the way it looks like right now. I mean, what a crap conference. I am embarrassed by the first 3 weeks of Big Ten football minus Ohio State.
Well, we talked about this before the season, Chris, how there was going to be, and I know I'm going off tangent here, but let's follow this path.
Look, no one wants to spend a whole hour talking about Penn State Bowling Green. I had to give away 3 hours of my life. I don't need to give away three more hours between this and TV and podcast and everything else. So please, anytime you can digress, I'm all for it today.
All right, let's go through the digression.
Let's do it.
Texas, Michigan was going to be another one of those conference-defining games.
Yes.
And I think Texas passed the test. Michigan.
It went the way you expected, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. By the way, I forgot. I also had Texas this week.
Good bets. Good bet.
Yeah, there was another. I did lose one other one. I'm trying to remember who it was, but so I wasn't. I lost two, but I think I was like 5-2 for the weekend. 6-2 because I had two Eagle bets. So I'll take that any weekend. Okay, Chris.
Sure. 6-2,
but Texas was so much better than Michigan. We thought they would win, but did we think that it was going to be this type of blowout? And kudos to our comrade here, our partner, Dustin Schutte, who writes for the Big Ten, who's been preaching for the last month or two, Michigan's not going to be very good, Jim. Trust me on this. Well, now I trust you, Dustin. That was an ugly performance by the Wolverines. But I wanted to hit on Notre Dame with you. Did you get a chance to see any of that, Chris?
I did, and it was glorious. It made my day.
It really did. But it was deja vu all over again with those officials with the mark late in the game.
You've got to be kidding me.
Third down run. Chris, the runner had the first down by at least a yard.
Yeah,
It wasn't close, but you instantly saw the side judge running in from the side, from the top of your screen. He's a good 2 yards behind where the runner was taken down. It wasn't even close. Now, a week ago when we had something similar with Penn State, West Virginia, my take was, you know, live, that could be a tough call. Okay, a lot of bodies around, could be a tough call. That one wasn't tough live, but they missed it both live and on replay.
There have been already this season, and we're not 3 full weeks into the college football season, just some baffling misses on plays that go to review. I mean, it's not healthy for the sport to have so many obvious calls that people who are watching at home, you listen to the commentators saying, oh, this is cut and dry. They bring in, you know, whatever retired NFL referee works for which network to come in and talk about their analysis of the call. And he'll say, oh, yeah, this is very clearly going to be overturned, or it's very clearly this. And then the call goes in the other direction. It just detracts from the credibility of the product in a damaging way, in my opinion. They got to get it cleaned up.
How is it happening? Is this a case of, now in that Notre Dame game, there was not a great replay where the ball was obvious, okay? However, you could surmise by where his body was. unless he was carrying the ball, you know, between his feet, if it was anywhere from his waist up, he was well beyond the mark to gain. So are they being taught, hey, look, if you can't see the ball, you just say, hey, you know, the call stands.
I think it's general incompetence, Jim. I really do. In the NFL, I've been banging the drum for years that it's ludicrous. And I don't know, maybe some feature of whatever sort of, you know, mafia-driven underworld actually runs that sport with all the betting and everything. But for the NFL, a multi-billion dollar global professional sports enterprise, to not have full-time officials, to me, is so insane it borders on suspicious. I understand that's harder for college sports because there are so many games, you need so many officials. But in general, college officials have never exactly covered themselves in glory in terms of their competence. And I know, Jim, you and I have actually discussed it, that throughout this country right now, there is a major league shortage of officials at every level. And you start out with guys who dip their toes into those waters officiating youth and high school sports. And then the ones who are really good at it and the ones who really enjoy it, they start moving up the ranks. I had a economics teacher when I was in high school who reffed high school games for years and then ended up moving up and becoming an official for the ACC. So when your feeder system starts to get sparse, that has knock-on effects up and down the ladder. So I don't know. I'm spitballing this theory as we're like workshopping it live here as we're talking. So I don't know if there's data to back it up, but I do know I have heard anecdotally from many people for some time now that there has been a problem at the youth and high school level getting enough officials. And so just like when you had a shortage of high school talent for a while during the peak of the concussion scare, the overall talent level starts to get watered down all the way up at the top level because you don't have as many options to choose from in terms of weeding out the bad ones from the good. Your pool of talent is just smaller to work and develop and prepare to go to the next level. So that might be a factor in it too. But all I can say is that I have watched from week zero onward games where the calls are just so egregiously wrong and everyone can see it in slow motion, high definition replay. And for the calls to be consistently gotten wrong in games that Penn State has and has not been involved in is maddening because it just makes you watch the game and think the result could be out of the hands of the players on the field.
You know, I want to continue this conversation because you're right. There have been so many egregiously bad calls. There's got to be a reason for it. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. It's quarter number two of our show. Chris, we somehow segued into the state of college football officiating, and you talked in terms of it seems to be happening all over, and perhaps it's just the lack of the feeder system from the bottom up. We're not getting enough talent, and you mentioned how we've experienced this following Penn State, but for many years, Penn State's place in the Big Ten was as the redheaded stepchild. And to me, that was what was going on. You know, it was Penn State. If a call could go one way or the other, it went the other way. It was almost comforting that that was the reason because there was at least a reason for it.
Sure.
Now, if it's just plain incompetence, that's scary to me. But what's scarier is getting it wrong, even. How competent does one have to be if we're watching a play on TV and it's obvious to us from TV? okay? And now you have the replay of it. So they're watching not just TV, but they're watching every single angle. They're able to slow motion it. They're able to do all that. And after all that, still get it wrong. So I'm not even talking about, boy, this is a really good official who's able to make these calls. I'm just talking about a person with common sense and any kind of competence at all, Chris. An untrained eye should be able to see these things. I don't think I'm trying not to go towards, gee, it's fixed in some way, because I don't believe it is, but they still keep getting it wrong.
No, I agree. Never attribute to malice what can better be explained by incompetence. I just think that a lot of these guys are not very good at their jobs. And it's a tough job. I'm not trying to take away from the fact that keeping up with high-level elite athletes moving at top speed is an easy job, because it's not. I respect the difficulty level of what football officials at high levels of FBS and the NFL have to do. Nevertheless, they screw up in front of a national audience at an alarming rate.
They really do. And there are so many tough plays to call, and they're getting the easy ones wrong. So anyway,
right.
That's what's disconcerting.
Like, here's the line. You can see it on the replay. There's a little yellow line they use with computers. Yes. You can see where the line to gain is. If the ball goes past that line, it's a first down, and then it gets spotted like a yard and a half behind it. It's insanity. I'm glad you got me going on this topic, because you've gotten me, get me fired up now. So whenever we do circle back to the stupid Penn State game, I'll be ready for it.
Okay. And we will get back to that stupid game. Yeah. But as long as we're talking about the national picture,
sure.
And I don't know if this lets Penn State off the hook or not. We're talking, you know, about the call Northern Illinois versus Notre Dame, where Northern Illinois really got jobbed on the call, but still overcame it and won. Ironically, it was a MAC team that beat Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, a MAC conference where Penn State escaped. But there was a trend this past weekend where a lot of teams really slithered by, just like Penn State did. Kansas State was fortunate to beat Tulane. Oklahoma barely escaped Houston, a not very good Houston. Oregon was favored by about 3 touchdowns against Boise State. Just escaped it, Chris.
Yeah, alarm bells have got to be ringing in Eugene right now. The consecutive weeks now, they have badly underperformed expectations.
And I think a lot of us were saying, hey, this is typical Alabama. They had a 1-point lead into the fourth quarter against South Florida. Chris, is this typical, or is something going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that I have a unified theory on that just yet. I do think there is something to, and I've talked about this with Goon and Noble a lot, is that there's just not as much practice time before the season as there once was. You know, they've really limited the amount of time you can have on field with the kids during August. And so just like we've seen in the NFL, where the rigor of the preseason has gone down, and so the quality of play probably dips through the first few weeks of the season. You saw a lot of laundry on the lawn in that Eagles-Packers game, for example. It may just be a function of that, that back in the day when Joe could have the guys running 3-a-days in August camp and really work them out and beat them up before they got to the regular season, they were just a little bit more fighting trim. And as many college football coaches point out, part of the challenge of that sport is you get a different team show up from week to week because you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-old college kids. Maybe just psychologically, Penn State understood what was at stake last week going into Morgantown, and they were just not mentally prepared for this contest against Bowling Green, who clearly came in dialed up and had a good game plan and executed it well and had some talent on the field. I'm shocked by that, to be honest, because I thought this was a sort of player-led team that would not be susceptible to that sort of letdown. And I was clearly wrong about that. But I don't know. I don't know what explains the sea to shining sea letdown of so many of these top teams, because you're right.
Is there a situation here going on, Chris, where the transfer portal may be helping this, where you get some players on the elite teams or the really good teams who aren't finding the field. So they're saying, you know what? Maybe I'll go elsewhere. Maybe I'll go to the MAC. And it wasn't part of our conversation here, but as an example, you know, you have a Kyle McCord, a five-star kid who went to Ohio State 1 year there where, you know, pretty much abused by the fan base that he wasn't good enough. He goes off and makes a, you know, mediocre Syracuse team a better team. Is that going on around the country?
Yeah, it might be. And I'm not ready. I like Fran Brown. I'm not ready to crown Syracuse just yet. I got some nice positive comments, Jim, last week from the movie buffs who got my Winston Wolfe reference. Well, let's go right back to that same line and not start doing that with Syracuse just yet, because Florida State clearly stinks. So we don't know how good Georgia Tech actually is just because they beat Florida State, who happened to have come into the preseason ranked number 10, because you could just as easily make the argument in the reverse, right? That the transfer portal and now the ability to hire as many, you know, quote unquote analysts as you want and get them coaching on the field, that allows the power teams to come in and poach talent from the sideline and the roster from these group of five schools just as much. And it should maybe all even out. I don't really know. I'll have to give a little more thought to what is my working theory of what explains the viral nature of stinking against lesser competition that afflicted the top teams in college football this past weekend, or at least many of them. But again, at least we can heave a sigh of relief that Penn State is 2-0 and not in total shambles. I mean, as we got into the last 5 minutes of that fourth quarter, I texted some friends and I said, the fate of the program is hanging in the balance right now. You lose this one like this, and everything is on the table. And I do mean everything.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I'm going to use Notre Dame as the example. Comparable kind of team with the same kind of playoff aspirations as Penn State. Playing at home against the MAC team, and they're heavily favored. And for much of the game outplayed, the difference was Notre Dame lost the game, lost theirs, didn't come up big. Leads me to the question, first of all, what you brought up, is that program changing for Notre Dame?
As far as I'm concerned, they should be out of the playoff conversation at this point. They're not in a conference. They can't play a conference game. Take Florida State off the docket as a potential quality win for them. I don't care whether USC turns out to be great and they beat them or not. You lost to Northern Illinois. You don't play in a conference. You can go play in an ice bowl game. That's it.
You don't think if they go the undefeated the rest of the way, finish 11-1, you don't think they'll make the playoffs?
I did not say that. I said they should be out of the conversation, in my opinion. Now, of course, they'll make the playoffs. They get a special exception for everything, But with the difficulty of the schedule, Notre Dame is playing this season, there is absolutely no excuse to put even an 11-1 team whose one loss is to Northern Illinois in one of seven available at-large playoff spots, because they can't have the top five because they don't play in a conference. So you're going to tell me there are seven teams that belong in this playoff field? They just don't have enough grist left on their schedule to justify being there after they lose at home to Northern Illinois. They should be out, as far as I'm concerned.
I believe you are correct, but I still think it will happen if they go 11-1.
Sure. Because of course. Yeah.
There is so much precedent for the committee taking the team with the fewer losses. That's going to be the case. And if one loss, you're definitely going to be one of only a handful of teams that have one or zero losses.
Also, who cares? None of this is about the integrity or the quality of the roster or anything. It's about eyeballs on television. And there are a bunch of drones out there who love the Fighting Irish. And there are a bunch of meatheads like me who hate them and will all tune in to watch that game, whether it's Love Watch or Hate Watch. So, of course, they'll get in.
I'm going to relay this question to Penn State, and I'm going to get us back on the Penn State deal
if
we come back. But How much is coaching involved in this? And I'm talking about Notre Dame right now. I'll ask the same thing about Penn State shortly, but this is now the third time Marcus Freeman has lost a home game when he's been at least a 16.5-point favorite. And we're not talking about a 20-year career here, Chris. He's only been there a couple years, and this is three times already.
I like Marcus Freeman a lot, so I take no pleasure in saying this. I was a big booster of his being hired there at Notre Dame. Again, just because I thought it was the right hire for them. Speaking objectively, I don't like that team, so I was hoping they'd hire a worse coach, frankly. But it appears I may have gotten my wish, because poop runs downhill and there has to be accountability. And that stat you just read off to me, that's the bottom line. It's not always true what Parcells said about the NFL and college football, that your record, you are what your record says you are. In this case, I think that maybe he is.
And, you know, there are situations where a game, an upset could happen, but fluke things happen. I'm thinking of the Penn State-Indiana game last year, that where Indiana had a couple big plays. You don't want that to happen, Chris, but you could say, hey, that's a bit flukish. But it could have been enough for Indiana to pull off the upset. What we saw with Northern Illinois and Bowling Green was not just a couple fluke plays, a couple crazy plays. We saw one team outplaying the other. I'm going to relay that to Penn State when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We are circling back to Penn State Bowling Green, Chris, and I used what happened at Notre Dame to segue what happened to Penn State. And, you know, early on, you talked about having a bit of the hangover after a big win, which it was against West Virginia, on the road, rowdy crowd, all of those things. But if that happens, you expect the team, especially on defense, okay, maybe one possession. Not an entire half, no. But for entire first half, how's this for another statistic for you? Bowling Green put up 24 points on Penn State in the first half. No fluke, no pick six returned, no 80-yard tipped pass for a touchdown. They marched down the field. They had two 10-play drives. They put up 24 points, more than any opponent did in a full game last season against the Nittany Lions defense. And this is Bowling stinking Green we're talking about. How do you explain that?
I don't. It's totally inexcusable. I give the coaching staff, James Franklin in particular, credit for restraint, because there was a whole table with a bunch of Gatorade coolers on it. I said, if I would have been down on that sideline, every damn one of them would have been on the ground and spilled out from that table getting flipped over after the second series. And all the curmudgeonly townies in College Heights who like to complain about the noise from the fireworks at Beaver Stadium, they would have had to go to another level, because they would have heard me screaming at the defense when they came off the field after that second series. I mean, just ludicrous. If I can stave off the inevitable one final time, Jim, and make one other note about college football this weekend and how it pertains to Penn State. I do think there were two very good results for the Nittany Lions. I think Iowa State upsetting Iowa was good for two reasons. First of all, just in general as fans, I think we can now be spared another fraudulent Kirk Ferentz-coached Iowa team that runs through a terrible schedule and then makes a completely absurd claim on a postseason bid. And it's also good for Penn State because, again, I think that pushes another team that could be in that at-large discussion just because of the record maybe that their schedule should set them up for. So that was a good result. I think also Illinois beating Kansas on their home field, that was good. Listen, I was not a big buyer in on Kansas. I didn't think they deserved to be ranked 20th. And if you looked at how the Illinois-Kansas game went last year when it was played at Kansas, Illinois basically had it won and then just blew it in the end. So you knew the teams were relatively close. And so when Kansas had to go up there, I felt like there was a good chance for Illinois to upset them. But I do think that helps us in two ways. It buttresses our perceived strength of schedule when the Illini come to town in a few weeks. And I think it may also lead to avoiding what happened against Bowling Green on Saturday, which is the team doesn't take them seriously. Now they have a win over a ranked team under their belt, so maybe going to get these guys' attention a little bit more when the Illini come to Beaver Stadium.
Let's look at placing the blame. We have head coach Franklin, coordinator Tom Allen. We have the players. I had somebody say to me, they're not tackling. The coaching, aren't they teaching them to tackle? Well, they tackled just fine in week one. Did the coaches throughout this week coach them how to not tackle? Hey, wait a minute there, linebacker. You made a good tackle there. You did everything right. I don't want you to do it that way anymore. Use this bad technique. No, that's not happening. But the tackling wasn't good, besides the fact that they were just getting out-schemed. So where does the blame go? Was it the just Tom Allen had a bad game plan? Somehow it's on James Franklin? Where do we place the blame?
Well, let's start here. What do you think President Truman would say?
That's where the buck stops, at the top.
Who makes the most money?
That would be James Franklin by a lot.
Whose name gets in the newspaper or, you know, now more appropriately on X the Everything app when Penn State's not playing well?
Well, just remember a year ago when this defense was playing so well, we were all saying how good Manny Diaz was.
Sure, and I'll defend Tom Allen here in a little bit. But
we said Manny Diaz.
Who hired both of those guys?
James Franklin.
Yeah, so the blame and the credit starts with the man at the top, and that's why he gets paid the big bucks. There's no question about it. James Franklin needs to take responsibility for how poorly the team played defensively in the first half and offensively in the second half. I don't care how good of a MAC team Bowling Green is. If you want to be taken seriously as the number 8 team in the country, you don't struggle in your home opener against Bowling Green. Now, again, we are fortunate to come out with the win, and we can take the positive of the fact that we get to work on things with a tick in the W column. James said that. I'm sure it's not going to go over well with a lot of the fans, but he's right. And I will stick by that he's correct about that. Was it Tom Allen's game plan? You get a different sense of the game, Jim, when you're in the stadium versus when you watch it. I have not had a chance to go back and watch the televised version of this game, and I'm dreading having to do so. And to be honest with you, I'm going to be straight up. I had my head in my hands in utter disgust for large swaths of that game. On Saturday, I couldn't even watch it live. I was just so sickened by what I was looking at. T. Frank, fortunately, has more of a stronger stomach than I do, and went back and looked at it. And he had some good analysis of the first half game plan from Tom Allen. And he said it was just very stripped down, very vanilla, very few adjustments. And it was just Bowling Green recognizing what we were trying to do, finding the holes in that defense, executing very well, and our guys just not making plays. I mean, there were two plays in the first half, a long gain, I think, on third down to keep a drive alive for the Falcons, and a touchdown where Zaki Wheatley had his eyes on the ball, and he just kind of mistimed it a little bit. And that happens when you gamble and you go to make the pick and you mistime it. A lot of those situations end up in giving up big plays. And so that happened to Zaki twice. I thought he, like his defensive teammates, played better in the second half. And again, I will say this. You look around the country, you see some of these other teams now trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what to do next after a demoralizing loss, Notre Dame chief among them. We don't have that problem. And part of it is because they created the problem in the first half with their poor play. The defense came out in the second half, and when the offense was not helping them out, the defense won that game for Penn State. So in terms of adjustment and refocusing the guys and the team leaders, getting that unit to play well when they absolutely needed to, I'm going to take that as a positive. Like, it's not all bad, but I just don't want to sit here and sing kumbaya to folks, because there's a lot to be very concerned about after that game.
And my fear is that did they create the game plan, show it to other teams, this is how you attack Penn State's defense. And the fact is, if you're doing it with much more talent, if you're USC or you're Ohio State and you have more talent, or if you're Wisconsin even, you have more talent than a Bowling Green, have you shown the here's the way to do it? Here's the game plan. And I'll throw something else out to you. Here was the chart for Bowling Green in their passing attack. They're passing from the 0 to 9 yards. They threw that pass 22 times, less than 10 yards. They were 17 for 22 for 133 yards. That is a crazy number. If you count passes behind the line of scrimmage, they are 21 for 28 for 148 yards. It seems like it was the short passing game, but it was there all day.
Yeah. And to go back to T. Frank's analysis, he talked about how initially he, like many of us, had criticized the lack of a pass rush, but then did point out the counterbalancing point that Basilak was getting the ball out in under 3 seconds. That guy, and you know, one thing I will say about this is he's another one of these sixth-year guys. Just been kicking around college football forever. He's a grown man, right? He should be worrying about paying his taxes and going to a job, but instead he's still playing college football. A lot of those players, they do mature over those last couple seasons. They start to see things and the game slows down for them in a way that allows them to have afternoons like he did against Penn State's defense. And we were giving them space. They were taking advantage of it. And whether he's getting the ball out quickly or not, there was just not a whole lot going on with the pass rush all afternoon.
But again, is he not an example of what I talked about with the transfer portal? Here's a guy who spent, what, like 4 years in a Power 5 conference.
Sure.
I think he started with, what, Missouri, then Indiana.
Correct.
So he's played at this level. And now you're a Bowling Green and you have that talent level at your school. And as you said, he's not 19 years old anymore. He's a grown up man and is able to take advantage of that kind of game plan, which then turns it around and says, hey, how concerned should we be about this Penn State defense? How concerned are you?
Again, not extremely concerned. I don't, you asked before, did they paint the game plan picture for the rest of our opponents down the road? Yeah, for sure. That tape is going to be studied. I think it is important to remember that the way teams look in the first few weeks of the season is not necessarily how are they're going to look down the line. We're going to be susceptible to what USC does on offense based on what I saw versus Bowling Green. And, you know, I never gave us much of a chance in hell to beat Ohio State. And that certainly was not improved in any way watching Ohio State versus Western Michigan and Penn State versus Bowling Green. Right. But no, I'm not actually considerably further down on the defense. I'm just disappointed by the fact that this team clearly did not come ready to play, though I do give them credit despite having been out to lunch for the first half on defense. And then again, kind of switching identities at the half and the offense screwing up. That's complimentary football.
Well, one could also look at it the flip way that, you know, are they doing enough when you're not having things together, like the defense in the first half and the offense in the second half? We will switch when we hit the fourth quarter here, Chris, to the offense, because there at least were, I think, a pretty lot of good things to talk about on that side of the ball. And, you know, we've been talking about explosive plays, and we seem to be getting plenty of those. And it also doesn't seem to be that the offense, when it does get stopped, you know who the biggest villain is? Themselves. when they get stopped, Chris, the offense seems to do it to themselves. We're going to talk about that and also the good things when we come back after this short break.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We finally circled around back to Penn State Bowling Green, the game on Saturday. Penn State escaped, which is more than we could say for our friends over at South Bend, where Notre Dame, they lost their game against the MAC team. And Chris, on offense, I think there was a lot to be thankful for, appreciative of. They played pretty well in a lot of ways. And let me start with Drew Aller. I think, again, another pretty good performance by him. But the most impressive thing to me was, again, there seems to be just an air of confidence about him, which we didn't see last year. When it's time for him to escape the pocket, run, he doesn't hesitate to do it. It's quick, it's decisive, and it means a first down. And I even will say in the one big sack where he was stopped like 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage by the time he was done, I didn't even have a problem with that play because it appeared while he was doing his circling around in the backfield, I almost thought he was going to escape and had a chance. And it was also third down. So if he doesn't make a play, they were going to have to punt anyway. I didn't like that he gave up 20 yards, but it appeared that he actually had a chance to escape. So let me hear your take on Drew Aller for this game.
Yeah, I'm positive on Drew coming out of the game. I think, like you said, his poise and what appeared to be confidence level, decision-making, kind of even-keeled throughout what could have been a highly emotionally charged situation. Those were all positives. I thought he threw the ball very well. There were a couple plays that ended up not getting made for one reason or another. Amari Evans drops a pass that would have gone for a first down and probably a lot more. Inexcusable. Cannot happen once, not once at this level. So that's a disaster and an issue that's plagued Penn State's receiving corps for some years now, and I've got no answer for, but it happened again on Saturday and put them in a very difficult position when the defense was playing exceptionally poorly. Again, for the second week in a row, Evans just clearly, overtly commits pass interference. Got away with it last week, did not get away with it on Saturday, takes a touchdown off the board that ends up being a turnover later on in the drive on probably the worst decision Aller made all day. And then he has another beautiful deep ball to Trey Wallace that is a combination of the Bowling Green DB, again, to give credit to their kids, makes a nice play on, and Wallace can't make the big play on it. And, you know, none of those things fall on the quarterback, and he finds Ty Warren, who's kind of one of the heroes of the day, again and again and again making the plays. So yeah, I'm not concerned about Drew Aller. I'm a little more concerned about the tackle's ability to protect him than I was after the West Virginia game. But yeah, quarterback is at the bottom of my list of concerns coming out of this one.
I'm in agreement there. And I think one of the things you have to look at this, I look at it, Chris, as there's a number of possessions within a game. And there aren't as many as you think there are. But
right.
In this game, Penn State punted the ball four times. And three of the four times that they had to punt, you could point at a self-inflicted wound. One time it was a holding that pulled them back. One time it was a holding and Evans' drop of what would have been a first down. The one time the absolutely terrible pass, terrible decision by Drew Aller. So the mistakes are self-inflicted in the offense. So I'm feeling, and again, I know this is Bowling Green and they're supposed to be putting up points, but it's comforting to know that the ability's there. Also, you look at the running game this year versus last year, where we were concerned about big plays, explosive plays from the running backs. I had Catron Allen and Nick Singleton with eight total runs of over 10 yards. That's what you're looking for from these guys, isn't it?
Yeah. Both looked as advertised coming into the season. I've talked about it before. This is one of the great running back tandems we've ever had at Penn State. Enjoy them while we got them. They made the plays when we needed them. On Saturday, Catron Allen looked much more like himself than he did against West Virginia. So that was a positive. And yeah, Nick Singleton is a game breaker. So credit to the O-line for opening the holes. Credit to the backs for taking advantage and full advantage when the opportunities were there. That's another positive. You know, look, it's, again, super frustrating game. Very, very difficult game to watch. But not without some favorable signs for what's ahead. And I talked in the preseason leading up to this year about how I actually thought we were going to be glad to have this early opportunity to work on things that needed to get cleaned up when you're breaking in three new coordinators with the bye week happening this week. And maybe some people felt it was too early, and I certainly did not expect to be wiping the sweat off my brow after we escape with a touchdown win over Bowling Green. But yeah, how are we? How glad are we, Jim, to have some time, maybe for KJ Winston to get healthy? We don't know what's going on with him, but for sure, for these guys to get put through their paces. I went back to my tailgate after that game and we all agreed. I hope these guys like running suicides because they should be doing them until they puke this week.
Well, that's the thing. I hope that the coaches are going to make these next 2 weeks so hellish.
Boot camp. I want it to be utter misery. Kent State is total garbage. They just lost to St. Francis in football. There is no, I mean, we better not look anything like we did against Bowling Green against Kent State. They don't need to worry about but the only opponent they need to worry about the next 2 weeks is their own indifference. So whether the coaches need to scream at them or beat it out of them or whatever they do, there is an opportunity for this team to get a lot better and refocused and play to its talent level going forward. And now, again, you talked about who gets the blame. Where's the responsibility? Well, it starts at James and it goes all the way down the org chart. There is a lot for them to work on over the next 2 weeks. And I, for one, as a Penn State fan, I'm very grateful that they've got a bye week to work through it.
Oh, this turned out perfect for them, Chris, exactly how you would want it. You want this time. So let's talk about this. It's the next 2 weeks. We both are in agreement. They should be giving the players hell for these next 2 weeks. Make boot camp, as you described it.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about them getting days off and focus on your homework and your life. No, do all that stuff in the off season. You want days off, okay? That's what January and February are for. Well, God, the season goes along. That's what late February and March is for now. You know, like you take your days off then. I don't want to hear about it. I'm very frustrated. I'm still very frustrated.
Hey, they didn't come here to play school, did they? They came here to play football. But all right. So now I'm anointing you Coach Buchanani, the new analyst that they brought in. Okay. James Franklin comes to you, Chris, and says, man, Chris, what a disappointing effort by my team. I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk to the boys. What are you going to say to them?
Well, I do my best in fits of emotional pique, Jim. So the time for me to do that would have been after the second series on Saturday. And I here's the thing. I don't know. I would really love to sit down with the position coaches and the coordinators, but really the position coaches, because these are the guys who are working most hands-on and most closely with the individual players, and just ask the question, what in the name of God happened on Saturday? Is this a mental thing? Did you guys not see and detect on tape the talent Bowling Green had coming in? And so you thought you could just skate with a vanilla game plan. And so that combined with just little lapses in execution created this avalanche that always buried you. I would want to understand a little bit more from the staffers who are working most closely with the players. How in the world, with the amount of talent that is on this football team, they could have played so poorly for so long?
And that's the thing that's disconcerting, because there is so much talent on this defense. And what we saw was, for me, it was very disconcerting to see the poor tackling going on.
Yeah.
Because that's
and
about
the defense
effort.
Looked so disciplined against West Virginia. None of the things that have driven me insane about Penn State football over the last several years were on display in that game. And so I thought, okay, finally, we got some big boys playing here. They're being coached up well. They are actually taking this seriously. We don't need to worry about that. And then it reemerges against the Bowling Green Falcons of all teams. We're probably lucky that that was the opponent, because we were able to escape with the win. And again, I don't understand why Notre Dame can't beat Northern Illinois, or Oregon can barely skate by Idaho. Thank your lucky stars, I suppose.
Well, you do escape with the win, but now do you start to look at this season any different going forward? I think we said there was only a handful of games we were concerned about, and West Virginia was one of those, Chris.
Right, right.
And, you know, all of a sudden, does it change how you look at the game against Illinois?
A little bit. I think I've always thought that game might be a little bit more interesting than people expected it to be. I'm glad it's at home. I'm glad we are probably going to get that night game atmosphere, although that's not yet official. I do think we're going to learn a lot about the team when we face Illinois. We're not going to learn much at all about them from Kent State unless they play down to the level of competition once again. Does this result have me shaking in my boots about the rest of the season? No, because I understand how college football teams can be different from year to year and how teams evolve over the course of the season. You go back and you look at the 86 team, not to mention them in the same breath with this squad after Saturday, but they had some near misses that would freeze your blood if you were there, you know, experiencing it live. So I'm not too worried yet, but at least there are some things to keep tabs on.
And I think it was also reflected, you know, the AP top 25 comes out and Penn State is still ranked eighth. I think that lets you know how the national picture is right now. So many teams did have this kind of close call. You're only going to get punished if you actually lose the game.
Yep. And two SEC teams jumped us, and they should have, Missouri and Tennessee.
And that's all right. You're still ranked eighth. Everything, I was fearful that they would get dropped because of this performance, especially when it was right after the game. But I think that's before I got to witness what everybody else was.
Thanks a lot, Notre Dame. We appreciate it. We should all send fruit baskets to Marcus Freeman's office. He's going to need the positive reinforcement.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Marcus. We really appreciate it. All right, Chris, that's going to have to be it for our show. Appreciate you. Appreciate all our listeners. Thank you so much. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.